It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, newly to Visalia, with 38 years of sobriety. Let's give it up for Roxanne.
You might not be able to see me. Can you hear me? All right. We want to go down a little bit? That better? All right.
You okay there?
Yep, that'll work. Okay, I'm Roxanne, and I am a grateful alcoholic by God's grace. Boy, got to start somewhere. Everybody knows how to drink, so I'm not going to stay in my story very much. I drank from the age of 9 to 19. I did what everybody else did. I went to any lengths to find the parties, to find the guys, to, you know, find the situations to be able to get the booze. My dad was running a moonshine still in our kitchen, so that was like my very first taste of the I want, I like this, and from there I just kind of kept on going. At 19, I was fighting over a guy that left me for someone else. How dare you? And I went on one of those rip-roaring drunks, I'll show you, with the bottle of whiskey, you know, just I'll show you. Well, I showed them all right. I ended up coming to on a bus on my way to the United States Marine Corps boot camp. That's a hell of a way to come to. I didn't, you know, this DI was yelling at me, sit down, shut up, do this. I had no idea where I was headed. I have no recollection of joining the Marine Corps. I did not even want to join the Marine Corps. I was not one of those gung-ho people, but, you know, I went to boot camp, and I'm like, I'll just straighten this out when I get there. Well, you know what? They don't let you out of the United States Marine Corps. So I drank Scope, Listerine, and that blue aqua velvet aftershave to get me through boot camp. And I didn't think I had a problem. You know, it's, you just make do with what you got. You know, I'll be out of here eventually. And, you know, I went to my first duty station out in 29 Palms, California. And I met up with some guys there in this van, and I just drank and used until I couldn't drink and use one more drop. We went over Memorial Day weekend. We went to this hotel, Joshua Tree Inn. And, you know, we're partying all weekend, and they're all passed out. The drugs are gone. The alcohol is gone. Everything's gone. I wanted more. And so I went out, dug around in the car, and I found a bottle at 6 a.m. in the morning on June 8th, 1980. And I proceeded to, you're alcoholic. No, you're not. You're alcoholic. You're drinking in the morning. No, you're not. You know, today I know that it was a moment of clarity that got me sober that morning. I did not know what AA was. I had no clue what Alcoholics Anonymous was, or, you know, I just quit that morning through the grace of God, that from a higher power that I was even yet to meet yet. I went to drug and alcohol counseling on base at first, and somewhere through the proper channel, she had to keep asking the chain of command. You know, they could tell me where to drink. They just couldn't tell me how not to drink. I, grace of God, again, came out of my mouth, what about AA? And the counselor made a phone call, and a lady picked me up, took me to my first meeting. And I've been to AA ever since. I was a 19-year-old, 10-foot-tall, bulletproof Marine with an attitude. I did not walk into these rooms saying, oh, please show me the steps. How can I do this? How can I get better? I didn't even know that I had an attitude problem yet at this point. But I suited up and I showed up. And, you know, before I knew it, I was cleaning ashtrays and they were washing coffee cups and sweeping the floor. And, you know, I kept coming back and, I actually didn't even go into full-blown DTs till I was 60 days dry. I was actually in a meeting and we were holding hands and doing the Lord's Prayer, and the next thing I knew, people were rushing me around and throwing me in an ambulance. And so I went to the Naval Hospital out there and shook and shook and shook for like 3 days straight, tied down, 4-point restraint. It was horrible. And I, 38 years later, can still remember it because I never want to forget. So after I went through the DTs, the Marine Corps actually sent me to rehab when I was 90 days sober. I had to wait till I got to my first duty station. I got there, they sent me, I was supposed to go to Camp Pendleton rehab for 6 weeks. They kept me 12. I was a freaking mess, a hot mess that first year of sobriety. And I'm so grateful for, like you say, the hands that shake your hand and greet you when you walk into a meeting and tell you to keep coming back, because I kept coming back and I kept hanging out. You know, I tried to hang out with the guys, the buddies I was drinking with in the Marine Corps, and that didn't work real quick. So before I know it, I was going to picnics and, you know, for coffee shops after the meetings, and I was getting to know sober members of AA. And that kept me sober for 2.5 years. I was very involved in AA. I went to H&I. They got me involved. I took panels out to Boron Prison. I was intergroup, GSR, all these different things. That, you know, they said service position. Okay, I jumped up, did them. And that was God's way of just keeping me in the rooms long enough for me to hit that second surrender. I was powerless over alcohol. I knew that from day one. But was my life unmanageable? I hadn't went to jail. I hadn't lost a home, a car, a family, and nothing. But I didn't realize that that's what the unmanageability was, the fact that I couldn't stop drinking. That once I start to drink, it puts off the physical craving, the mental obsession, the spiritual malady. And even though I wasn't drinking, I had the mental obsession that, you know, I'm 19 years old. I can drink when I'm 21. I can this, I can that. What about when I get married? I had baby reservations. They weren't totally there, but, you know, it took what it took. So coming around and hanging out with my sponsors and hanging out with people in the program, they kept telling me I needed to find this higher power. Came to believe in a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. I was hard-headed. I didn't know I was insane. I thought, well, my higher power can be the guy in my life. Sounds good to me. So by the time 2.5 years sober come around, I was getting a divorce. And I was engaged to two guys at the same time. That's my higher power in my first 2 years of sobriety. Well, you know what? The book says something about humans fail us. And that's exactly what was happening in my life. I had one guy I was engaged to was in AA. I was living with my sponsor. I was living with him. The other guy was a party goer. I called him. I was going to go there. And I could hear the party in the background. I knew if I went that night, I would drink. And there was just enough AA in that house. The big book was on the coffee table. My sponsor was there. One of my fiancés was there. And God was there. That kept me from going that night. And that's when I didn't go, I didn't drink, and the next day, I fired the sponsor I had and got a new one. I fired the concept of a higher power I had. I got a new one. And I got busy on those steps. I found that, you know, all I had to do was make a decision to come to believe in, turn my will and life over to the care and protection of that higher power. And then it says in the big book, action, action, action. We launch into a program of action. And that's where I had to get out that pen and pencil and paper and just start writing these things down. All those things that were blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. And we all go through it, you know, it's a inventory full of fear and immoral. And, you know, my sponsor's going, it's a fearless inventory, a moral inventory. All we're doing is inventorying what's working in your life and what's not working in your life. And there's clear-cut instructions in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Exactly, precisely what the book's about. Exactly how to do the four step. You know, you do your column one, who am I resentful at? And what it affects. But we do the column one all the way down. And then we, what it affects. And the cause and what it affects. And then the next pages, you know, it goes into things like fear. It tells me I have 100 forms of fear. And I was afraid of everything. That first, you know, I put on that front of being that 10-foot tall bulletproof Marine and that I went by the name of Rocky back then when I first entered Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd have my Marlboro Reds rolled up in my sleeves. I had utilities and combat boots. And I would come in a meeting and I'd turn the chairs around backwards and kind of like, just dare you to talk to me. Don't you talk to me. I mean, I was so full of rebellion. I was full of depression, anxiety, resentment, anger, revenge, fear. All of those things were just... And so by the time I had a little bit of sober time, all that stuff was starting to just boil up around me. And I had to work the steps or I was going to drink. And so going through, you know, each page, it tells me, you know, write about your fears. It tells me to write about my harms. It tells me to look at my part. It just clear-cut instructions. It gives me even a prayer for when I was angry. It even gives you a prayer, God, please keep me from being angry. And then there's a little fear prayer after that. And I mean, it's just so simple we wrote, but we complicate the big book so much. And so going on, you know, I got a sponsor to sit down with me to do that fifth step when I was done with all the writing. And we looked at my character defects. I mean, that's what it's telling me to do, find my character defects, my flaws, my things that are blocking me from God. What can I correct? What can I start doing better? So in step six, you know, it's kind of like that's step six is telling me what I was doing wrong. So I've already got that written down on my paper. Step seven, I'm humbly asking God to take those away. And that's when I start doing things right. Then I start doing the opposite of what I've always done. And I've already had my eight-step list when I wrote my fourth, so going right on into my amends, you have that freedom. You get those nine-step promises. This program wasn't meant to come in here and come to meetings for, you know, well, I'll start the steps in 2 years. I'll get to them. We come in here because we're sick. We're a mess. We have the spiritual malady. We're looking for that spiritual solution. And so I'm really a back to basic teacher. I sponsor different ways, but I do sponsor, and I try to get you in the book. I try to get you through the steps as soon as possible so you can get well and enjoy what this program's supposed to give us. And that's going on, you know. My amends, you know, I was 19 years old. I'm like, who am I going to have to make amends to? But, you know, I had coworkers, I had bosses, I had family, I had friends that I took advantage of. I had a list. You know, some of those I couldn't make directly. I used to go out drinking, and I would steal the tips from the waitress. So I could drink all night, go home with $40 for gas for the week. I mean, isn't that what alcoholics do? We figure out a way. Well, I can't go drinking. I don't have any money tonight. Well, let's figure out how to do it. So those kind of things, I mean, I never could go back and make the amends to some of those waitresses and bars and people I took advantage of. But I was told to do those random act of kindnesses. And, you know, I've went in and did, I was a Girl Scout leader for a while to teach little girls about self-esteem. I gave money to drug programs, police departments, just different random things that shows to my God. You know, today it is God of my understanding is God, but it took a long time for me to get there. I used the phrase higher spirit. I used, you know, group of drunks, the people in the rooms. It took me a while, you know. It took me till I actually worked the steps and got to the spiritual solution that I can now call my higher power God. And that's what's so neat about the program is you can pick your own concept. It tells us all over the book, even atheists and agnostics, and the chapter to the agnostic talks about faith. That whole chapter's about faith. Find some kind of concept that you can believe in, whatever it may be, because as the years go by, the program grows and my higher power grows. If I keep coming back, I keep applying those steps. You know, we get to step 9 and you get all those promises. Well, if I continue to make direct amends whenever possible in step 10 and don't bring all those character defects and all that stuff back up into my life again, then it can remain where it's at. If I need to go back in and do another 4th and 5th, I have that option too. There's been a few in 38 years of sobriety that I've went back and did a whole set of steps, took care of what I needed to do. The whole thing is to get to that spiritual malady, you know, get the spiritual malady and get a spiritual solution to it. And for me, that's continuing. You know, your step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God as you understand Him. And as long as I can continue to do that, then I can go on in step 12. And, you know, with step 12, having had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, if I don't take all the steps, I don't get that spiritual awakening. And to help other people. Can I carry this on to the newcomer in step 12 if I haven't already worked step 12? No. Can I be of service to God and continue that, living by the principles that I just learned in these steps? No. It's like, it's just, I wake up every day with untreated alcoholism. As long as I do now what I know how to do and continue to live and work the steps, I don't have what I had back when I wanted to drink. And, you know, life gets interesting, you know. So I've taken you through the 12 steps. This is where my life's at. It's going good. 2.5 years sober. I, you know, telling God at this point, okay, you're going to come first before a guy in my life. Right. I was getting out of the Marine Corps. I was going along with that for a while. I was getting out of the Marine Corps. We were getting married. One of the guy that I was engaged to that actually was in the program. We broke off for a while till I worked my steps, got back together. But we were going to get married, and see, he came in the program a felony on the run. So I met this guy that I'm going to grow up and marry in Alcoholics Anonymous, being a felon. And he's, you know, working steps and doing the same things I am. We're going to Boron Prison. We're doing all this stuff. And so he's almost 2 years sober, goes in Boron Prison, signs in with his name and social security number, just like we'd been doing in H9. And they ran a spot check, and they came out and arrested him. They're like, you're right here. It's like, you know. He got to enjoying Alcoholics Anonymous so much, he forgot. You know, he told his sponsor, oh, I'll take care of that in a year. And he was almost 2 years sober. But, you know, it was 13 days before we were supposed to get married. They come out to our house, the sheriff, and, you know, he hands me his chip and his keys and his wallet and says, call the boss, I'm getting extradited to Utah for 5 years. You know, and I'm just like, you know. But I had tools this time. And this time it was like they took him off, and I went to sponsor's house and told him what was going on, his friends. They said, yeah, we were afraid this might happen someday. And I went the next day and talked to his boss. He was a catering truck driver, so I took over his route. Never skipped a beat, never not trusted God. I just did what was in front of me. And so by the end of the week, you know, I had money coming in, I had a check, and the miracles of the program is God put all of us in that place at the right time. And his boss, my new boss, was an ex-probation officer that had, you know, a lot of pull. And before we knew it, he was released on $1,400. It cost me $1,400 of fines and restitutions, and he was released with a clear record. That only happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. Those were the miracles that we have gotten to experience. He went on to work at government contracts for 20 years after that. It never affected him one time. He passed away in 2013 with 32 years of continuous sobriety. But he is part of my story, so I have to tell some of that. Yeah, it's like, it was just amazing how all these things just fell into place. God was doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. So we got married, you know, we went off living life, doing what you do, having babies and having a married life and having jobs and, you know, doing what things happen and raising those boys. Both those boys were born in Alcoholics Anonymous and, you know, drug around with us to meetings and taught about a God of their understanding. And, you know, wasn't a whole awful lot of major stuff going on until my teenager turned 15. And my youngest was arrested on 13 counts of burglary. And I just took that so personal. It's like I sent him to high school that morning. I didn't send him off to cause all these things. And he was in and out of jail. He was in and out of rehabs. He was in and out of mental hospitals. And, you know, it's hard to watch your kids go through this crap. You think, okay, they're raised sober. Everything's fine. They've been raised in a good home. You know, but it affects everybody. And it affected actually both of my boys are alcoholic, but my oldest actually got sober about 4 or 5 years ago. So, you know, I reached out to the hand of AA and Al-Anon when my son got arrested, and those Al-Anon ladies took me to court, and they helped me with letting go and letting God and, you know, just doing what I had to do. And, you know, I took it personal myself. I kept saying I was the mom, and I was going to AA still. I was still going to meetings, but I was going through this self-justification area in my life. I kept justifying these little things, like I took out a no-smoking life insurance policy, but I was a smoker. And I'm like, they don't know, you know. And all this little rationalization things were happening when my son got in trouble. And I was 18 years sober at the time, and I found myself just so alone in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have that, felt like I had that conscious contact with that higher power. I was really struggling one day. I can't say that I was craving a drink. All I know is that that peace of mind and serenity had left me. And I got serious one more time, and I got a new sponsor, and we went through these things, and we kind of did a little bit of work on, you know, another fourth and fifth step, and, you know, made my higher power, you know? It's like, okay, I need my higher power in my life. What am I doing? And so from here on out, you know, that's what I've done. I've continued to have that conscious contact with the higher power. I continue to work steps. I continue to live the principles. I continue to work with others, be of service to God. And some of that of be of service to God can be as simple as just let somebody in while you're driving. You know, just wave the guy in front of you. Don't pull up in front of him and stop so he almost hits you. You know, it's random acts of kindnesses out there. Open doors, make smiles, you know. I try to live my life like that today. The rest of life, you know, the same thing. It kind of goes on for a while, and I continued on with AA and service work and just the things you do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And in 2007, well, I'll go back one step. 2004, I fell on black ice in Colorado and I disabled my back. And I know today that if I was not active in Alcoholics Anonymous and have that conscious contact with a higher power, I would have went to that doctor and said, I need drugs and I need this and, oh, poor me, I need booze. But I didn't. I went to those doctors honestly, you know, I told them I was in recovery. This is what, you know, what can we do? And so physical therapy and TENS units. And there's things you can do that you don't have to just run off and go get pain medication. And so one more time, Alcoholics Anonymous is working in my life because I'm working it. So going on until 2007, we were living out. I come from a place called Newberry Springs. It's out the other side between Barstow and Baker. It's in the middle of freaking nowhere. there was meetings out there, but there was the same two, three, four guys. You know, everybody knows everybody's story, and you get out to some of the other meetings in the other town sometimes. But I was still active, at least as active as I could be. We were living in the same town as my mom and dad, me and my husband, and my mom got sick. And I didn't know how sick until she said she wanted to go on hospice. And so we put her on hospice, and I was her caregiver and took her to her last breath 6 days later. And then it became, you know, I was grateful. I went to a meeting that day, and, you know, I went in to see some of my lady friends at a meeting, and they said, you're going to lead the meeting the day she died. And I'm like, okay. And that's what we do. We just step in. We just do more AA when things go, or when a lot of stuff's going on in life. Well, I helped with my dad for 18 months later, and he actually went on hospice, and he lasted almost a month, but I also took him to his last breath. And it was very difficult, but I yet to knew what it was all about. I just, you kind of do what you need to do, and you stay close to God and AA. And a year later, my husband went on hospice. And so I also took him to his last breath in 6 days. And I was like, at one point, you're like, God, I don't know how much more I can do of this. But you do go through the motions. You trust God. And it was okay. I did what I needed to do. And today, I can say it was a spiritual journey. It was hard the 3 years I was going through it. But coming through the other side of helping your loved ones get into heaven and to be the last presence that they see and feel and, you know, it's miraculous. It's another one of those miracles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Since then, we were married 30 years. So losing a mate of 30 years, I was devastated. I was frozen. I was, you know, whatever all the emotions that you can come up with. But I still had God in my life, and I still had AA. And because I had that conscious contact with my higher power, and I was actively in AA, I didn't drink. Since then, I've heard of many other people say, you know, well, how come you didn't drink then? Or I drank after my mate died. I can't drink. Even now, in all this pain and suffering and life gets lifey, I still do not have a choice to pick up a drink. I learned that way back in step 1, 2, and 3. When I pick up a drink, it just starts that whole phenomenon of craving, mental obsession, spiritual malady all over again. So I can get through life today if I don't pick up the first drink. As long as I stay close to my higher power. And I, at that time, I didn't know where that journey was going to take me. I was actually had been going to AA online after my mom died. So about 2010, I got involved with AA online. And it was great because when everybody was on hospice and I was stuck at home or they were in the hospital, I was connected to AA people. I was going to AA text meetings. I was just doing what I never skipped a beat. I just couldn't get out to face-to-face real meetings. And some of those AA sites that are online right now, modem to modem, saved my butt because they were there to help me. They were there to support me. They would check on me. They would guide me. And so after my husband passed, I continued on with the online AA. I just got more sites. It was like, okay, if one meeting's good, 3 sites are good. Went on to do, there's now, I'd always just done text, writing, typing type meetings, but there's actually a video meeting out there now where you can listen to the meetings live. And so I got involved in that site, and so I chair a meeting there once a week on Friday nights. It's 2 a.m. meeting, it's 11 p.m. for me. But I'm still being of service, still offering myself to Alcoholics Anonymous where I can. And I'm grateful for that. So I moved here at the end of August. This was a major move to leave the house that my husband died in, where my parents, this town my parents died in. It's been kind of a little bit of a rough start for me. God has a sense of humor. I actually ended up breaking my foot the day before I moved. So I actually showed up in Visalia with a walking boot. I just got out of that here a couple months ago, but I was in it like almost 3 months when I first got here. And I've been to some meetings here. I've went to the picnic. I went to the workshop, the 1940s workshop. So I've gotten out to some activities. I've gotten out to some meetings. And hopefully, you know, things are going to start coming together and I can get out a little bit more. It is a little difficult with my back and my legs, but You know, I get myself around out when I can. And in the meantime, all those people on AA online all over the world, global, has the people that have been helping me get through this move and help me got over my husband's, you know, passing. And I did that, like you said, any time that you're going through a whole big thing of life, I just add more AA. So after my husband died, I did get put on a speakers list, and I kind of spoke all over Southern California there for a while. And, you know, I suited up, showed up for God. What do you want me to do today? That's the way I live my life. And I was at, I guess it was where I met Bill, was at that 40s workshop. He kind of kidnapped me. I haven't seen you before, and something about heard how much time you have, you're going to speak. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, here I am, and all I can say is, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is wonderful. It's miraculous. It will take you places that you never ever thought possible that you could dream of going. And things in my life, there's just so many miraculous things that have transpired in my sobriety. And the story's not over yet. You know, I get up every day and say, okay, God, what now? What's next? When trouble arises, we pray a little harder, we reach out a little more. When things are okay, you pray a little more, reach out a little more, you know. You just have to do what you have to do. Anyway, I am a very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am thankful for letting me to share.